From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in Geneva, Switzerland in May, when a resolution to encourage breastfeeding was on the table at the United Nations World Health Assembly. The resolution was expected to be passed quickly. It said that based on nearly 40 years of research, mother's milk is the healthiest for babies, and countries should try to restrict inaccurate or misleading information about substitutes for breast milk. In an unexpected move, the delegation from the United States pushed back, seeking to water down the language in the document. As reported by the New York Times, delegates wanted to remove language that, quote, called on governments to protect, promote, and support breastfeeding, and another passage that called on policymakers to restrict the promotion of food products that many experts say can have deleterious effects on young children, end quote. Now, when asked about the move, an HHS spokesperson told the New York Times that the original resolution placed unnecessary hurdles for mothers seeking to provide nutrition to their children. He specifically cited women who cannot breastfeed. Critics of the move expressed concerns that the U.S. was protecting the baby food industry, the formula industry. Health advocates who attended the conference say they saw no evidence of that, and eventually the Russians stepped in and introduced a resolution without a challenge from the Americans. Now, despite the political nature of the conversation, what happened in Geneva reflects a bigger issue, the push-pull some mothers feel when it comes to making decisions about breastfeeding. The CDC reports that breastfeeding rates continue to rise. According to 2016 data, more than 8 in 10 mothers began breastfeeding their children at birth. Yet not all women are able to or want to breastfeed. Some mothers who opt not to say they are judged for choosing to bottle feed, and some breastfeeding women say they face challenges with nursing or encounter other issues like the stigma surrounding feeding their babies in public. Well, this hour we discuss a range of issues related to breast and bottle feeding and how to help all new mothers find the best options for their children and for themselves. I'd like to welcome our guests in studio. Welcome to Dr. Casey Rosen Carroll, Medical Director of Lactation Services and Programs at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Doctor, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Maria Elena Velez de Brown, who is Monroe County Deputy Commissioner of Public Health. Dr. Velez de Brown, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Also with us is Jacqueline Lindsay, licensed social worker with the Baby Love Program at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Jacqueline, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Megan Muller is a registered dietitian, certified lactation consultant, and president of the Rochester Regional Breastfeeding Coalition. Megan, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And on the line with us is Joy Getnick. And Dr. Getnick is a mother who decided to bottle feed and has, like everyone, so many experiences to share with this. Dr. Getnick, welcome to the program. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so I guess I want to start with Dr. Rosen Carroll, but there's so many different ways we can go with this. Were you surprised with what you saw in Geneva? Let's just start there. Do you think it was misunderstood? Did you find that moment troubling? What did you make of what you saw there?
Yeah, I mean, thanks, Evan. I find it immensely troubling. Unfortunately, to those of us in the breastfeeding support community, a little bit less surprising than perhaps to others. And I think there's a big misinterpretation point, right? And this is the point that I think comes across in the media very frequently in pushing that there's a battle of sorts between breastfeeding advocates and mothers who, for whatever reason, choose or are not breastfeeding. And I think it's a false dichotomy. And it was really highlighted in the United States resistance, saying that this put up barriers to people who are choosing to formula feed or who need to use formula, whereas that's never been the intent. And in fact, historically, the barriers have existed for the opposite choice, the choice of breastfeeding.
Okay. And now I wonder if anybody would be surprised that we already have a stack of emails and comments from mothers. I mean, it is emotional. It's difficult. And I say this on all sides. I mean, the decisions that mothers make, decisions that parents make can be judged for or against breastfeeding in public, not in public, support services or not. It's remarkable the judgment that happens. So let's at least start kind of there. Now that we can get past Geneva and see the strange politics at play there.
Right.
But in general, forget what happened in Geneva. I think everyone can agree that we've all met mothers who've been really emotionally judged, haven't we?
Yeah, and for some reason, I think motherhood is an intensely public experience for many people, and it seems to be this open invitation for people to criticize, and whether that's criticizing about whether your child's wearing a jacket or how you choose to breastfeed, there are many inappropriate ways that that comes out. My sense is that the research has finally, medicine has finally proven nature, right? And so we've done science to prove that we really need to go back to the old way of infant feeding as much as possible. But when the medical community comes out in favor of this and the conditions are not in place to make this a choice that's possible for everyone, for instance, even for people who couldn't breastfeed, in some countries we have nationalized breast milk banks. We don't have that in this country. So we say breast milk, breast milk, breast milk. And as soon as all of a sudden that's not possible, we say, oh, but there's formula, right? And of course, that's going to create a lot of stigma, a lot of bad feelings. And we really need to change the conversation and say 8 out of 10 women want to breastfeed. What does it mean that fewer than half are able to meet their goals?
Okay. Dr. Velez-DeBrun, how do you view the sort of the current climate of this conversation here in our community?
Well, I agree with everything that Dr. Rosen-Carroll has mentioned. I'm happy to say that in this community, I've found that there is a lot of support for women who want to make the choice to breastfeed, and there are actually more services and support groups available to them than perhaps in some other communities. And we actually have quite a legacy of empowering women to make that choice if they so choose, whether that's been through peer mom-to-mom support groups and WIC programs. More recently, there's been a lot of grant funding to do research about what women want to do, what they're able to do. We have laws on the books. They are not always equally enforced in all situations, but at least in our community, there's a lot of help for people who want to find out more information and who just need help, whether it's going seeing Dr. Rosen-Carroll in her lactation medicine clinic or finding a ways to talk to your employer about taking the time that you are entitled to by law.
Okay. Megan, how do you see the climate of breastfeeding or not in our community and compared to maybe how you've seen it over the years? What's the state of it now?
Well, I've been working in this field in various different ways for over 10 years, and I would say that there's been some change for the better, but we still have a really long way to go. Yes, there's laws in place. New York State has some of the most protective laws in terms of breastfeeding in public and breastfeeding or expressing milk after returning to work. However, a lot of women still face those barriers at work sites or if their child care provider isn't providing milk in a way that's supportive of breastfeeding. In public, we still see women who are harassed by other patrons. And, you know, sometimes even healthcare providers who may not be informed on some of the issues surrounding breastfeeding. So luckily, the Breastfeeding Coalition here in Rochester received a grant to kind of work on some of those issues and also to increase access to support. So right now, there are a lot of peer-to-peer support through the WIC program, through La Leche League, and the grant has also helped to support more access through what's called a baby cafe. So it's a drop-in group. Right now we have 3 different locations, and it's just another opportunity for someone to receive high-quality help that's free of cost and will provide either bus passes or parking passes so that transportation is not a barrier as well.
Okay. Jacqueline, how do you see things?
So working here in the community of Rochester, going into homes and working with women who are delivering babies, set to have babies, there are a lot of women who choose not to breastfeed, and that's something that we support. However, a lot of the women who say initially, you know what, I don't want to breastfeed, they have never had anybody talk to them about breastfeeding. They don't really know anything about breastfeeding. So it seems scary, especially first-time moms. So I think a lot of the women who choose to breastfeed after working with somebody who might have experience, they're glad that they made that choice. But again, we don't judge women who choose to bottle feed. Not to say that there isn't judgment, because I have seen it. But I think having that support from somebody in your life who says, I support you no matter what you choose, is really important.
Okay. Joy, can you tell us about your experience?
Sure. So I chose to bottle feed for both of my kids, one of whom is now just 8 weeks old, and it was a choice I made very much on my own and together with my partner with no regrets. I think the research is confusing to a mom like me, because I hear what the other people on the panel are saying, And then you talk to your pediatrician, you talk to the nurses in the maternity ward, and across the board, everyone in my OBGYN, and across the board, everyone says we can't prove these things, and there's nothing wrong with formula, and your kid is fine. For me, it was a really, really important choice for my own mental health to be able to trade off feeding during the night to get better chunks of sleep and split it up with my husband, who's a primarily stay-at-home dad. I wanted to have my own body back and have that independence. And I realized that to many women that sounds selfish, but it's something that I chose. And my 3.5-year-old and I still have a wonderful bond, and I'm sure that our little guy and I are developing one as well. But even just this past week when we were talking, my mom and I, about having some friends over to meet the baby and bringing stuff versus writing a check, she said, well, I'll tell people you always could use money for diapers and formula. And I said, you know what, could you just say diapers? And then I thought, that's crazy. Like, I have no concerns about my choice, but why am I afraid to tell your friends that it's a choice that I made?
Have you felt judged in other contexts or nervous about your decision, Joy?
Very much so. And I think the thing that happened in Geneva was also like, oh my God, like, I think it's so hard for women to say it's okay to bottle feed. That's a choice that I made. And when I talk to my friends, most of the women who ended up bottle feeding will say, well, I wanted to breastfeed, whether or not that's true. But it's what they feel they're supposed to say. Or, well, my kid didn't take well to it, or I wasn't producing enough. I very rarely meet someone like me who will say, no, I really thought about it. I made a choice. It had nothing to do with production or my kid. And I'm okay with that choice. Not even just okay with it, but it's not even a question. But I actually think where I felt most judged was the first time at the hospital when I was delivering my 3.5-year-old, because a lactation consultant comes into the room. And unlike the women on the panel who are speaking so lovely about empowering choices, the person that the hospital sends does not empower choices. They make it very clear it's about breastfeeding. And I think with increased awareness of postpartum depression and family circumstance and lots of things, we would be much better off to have someone like someone on the panel talk about actual choices and empowering choices in a much safer, open environment.
Okay, well, let me ask, and let me ask our guests in studio, and I'll start with Dr. Casey Rosen Carroll on this. When it comes to the research, what can we definitively say about the benefits of breast milk vis-a-vis formula? I do not ask, by the way, in any sense to try to judge, but I want to have a conversation about what facts tell us, because what I don't hear from the panel here is, Here are the facts, and if you don't do this, you know, you're a bad parent, you're a bad mom. I don't hear that. I hear a really sort of supportive nature of comments, but we also know that science is science, and research can help us understand. And
sure.
But there's also confusion sometimes among the public about what science does or does not say. What
Absolutely.
Does the science say
sure.
when it comes to breastfeeding?
Yeah, and I'm happy to address this question because it does come up a lot. And I think that the important thing is that what we've been saying is, what are the benefits of breastfeeding, right? And what we really need to be thinking about are, what are the effects of infant formula? Because for all other conditions, we think about, okay, what should the baseline be? What is the baseline for humans? And then what does adding something to that baseline do? And breast milk and formula are essentially completely different substances. Breast milk is a human fluid. It has bioactive components. It has cells in it. It has, they're not just ingredients, but there will be proteins and there will be enzymes to degrade those proteins. And then there will be hormones that impact the infant's gut to behave in particular ways. Some of the things we're finding are things like human milk oligosaccharides, which for years we thought, oh, they did nothing because we can't digest them. And it turns out that they feed our microbiome. So in essence, breast milk is a living substance, and infant formula is the best approximation that we have to generate nutrition. So if you think of breast milk as breast milk is nutrition, breast milk is a signal, right? And breast milk is an experience, right? Breast milk is three things. Formula is the nutrition, right? And if you don't have enough breast milk or you don't have access to breast milk, absolutely you should use formula, right? So when we look at the data started really that we started conglomerating these large scale systemic reviews with meta-analyses, gold standard of data, looking at population-based studies. And those are the big studies that people like to quote from the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, the ARC report, and the World Health Organization, looking at breastfeeding in high-income countries. And what both of those found, the earlier one was from 1997, the later was from 2013, And what both of those found was that on a population level, so not speaking about one individual baby, but on a population-based level, breastfeeding by far has benefits over formula. That's the way the research was phrased. So 70%, 78% reduction in hospitalizations for lower respiratory tract infections like pneumonias and bronchiolitis.
We're talking early in life, right?
Well, the data go through 2 years. We are finding later data that's looking at 3 years and beyond. But these first ones are, we're looking at the first like 6 months to a year of life. Over a 30% reduction in sudden infant death syndrome, a 19% reduction in acute lymphocytic leukemia, reductions in diabetes, type 1 and 2. And let's not forget that the mammary gland is a part of this, and the mammary gland belongs to the mother, which is why we see 30% reduction in breast cancer rates in women who breastfeed per year of lactation, in addition to effects on postpartum depression and decreased diabetes of both types. And that's just a limited list so that we can fit within this hour. The next phase of studies really looked at what are the components doing to decrease illness in infants. And so I'd point out something like the necrotizing enterocolitis data, which looks at the fact that even if you give donor milk, if mother milk is not available, you can limit necrotizing enterocolitis, a severe gastrointestinal disease with high mortality rates in the NICU, to almost nil. And so we do know that there are definite, as good as evidence gets, evidence is always an approximation of the truth, right? But there's very good scientific evidence, and people who are not making that clear may be concerned about creating guilt, right, in people in their environments for their patients. But I do believe, more importantly, in informed consent. And what I really appreciate about the caller is that she really felt like she had proper informed consent. And I think it's really important that people know what they're choosing, or else it's not really a choice.
Joy, you want to add to that?
You know, I think it's interesting, my background, just by way of clarifications in health policy, but I'm speaking as a mom, and I think you have to trust your provider. But even when I guess I'd be curious to then talk to my provider to get a better sense of, you know, how those studies are done and what the other socioeconomic factors are, that how you can even know if someone is actually breastfeeding and what the other factors that lead to all of these things. And then ultimately, I may still choose to formula feed, and I think that I would. And I hope that's a choice that our society allows me to make. But I do agree about clear information, and I feel that I've been getting it from everyone. It is different, obviously, in the information you're sharing. I think the information that was coming to me is more contextualized in terms of the long-term health of a kid and the pros and cons of every choice that we make. But a happy mom is definitely part of a happy kid, and I know that my household is happier because I'm happier.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things here that I think probably bear exploration, because Joy brings up socioeconomics. I started hosting this program in January 2014, and a month after I started hosting, a study came out of Columbus, and the medical community locally was sort of privately telling me, don't overstate this one, you know, don't, and I still remember the study. I mean, it was the headline, breastfeeding benefits appear to be overstated, according to the study, and it was based on socioeconomics. And I've been told by many people much smarter than I, who understand the research better than I, that they think that study is either limited or flawed, but what the researchers in Columbus were saying was, if you take two kids in the same family, and one is breastfed and one is formula fed, you get largely the same results. And that therefore a lot of the variables of socioeconomics and nutrition and just general health and life choices may be more factoring into the what happens to a child as they get older, vis-a-vis just trying to single out breastfed or not. And I've been told, be careful with that one. You know, so.
Yeah, I would be careful.
Okay. because intuitively, I mean, I hear Joy saying, you know, she suspects, you know, she's wondering if socioeconomics can be tied to some of the
absolutely
the benefits.
And I really think that the group in this room is uniquely situated to discuss the socioeconomics, because that's really a super big important part of, one, the ability to breastfeed, right? Two, the information you get, and three, what you're going to do about it. That being said, the study that you do bring up, I think it was a retrospective study. It was a secondary data analysis. It actually massaged the data in some pretty atypical ways. And of course, if you know, if you have two siblings and one doesn't get bronchiolitis, right, just because you reduce the risk by 80% of going to the hospital for bronchiolitis, that one child may still not get it. And that would be great. That's what we all want, right? But then interpreting a whole study based on that is really tricky. And I think the data were flawed in that study. But I do think we need to talk about socioeconomics. And I do appreciate what Joy said, that whenever a patient comes to me, if breastfeeding is hurting them or would hurt them, the first thing that everybody in this room would agree on is the most important thing is a healthy mom and a healthy baby and bonding. And then let's talk about how to feed your baby.
Okay. And one of the things that Joy also brings up is healthy mom, healthy sleep schedule, a chance to sort of function in a way that doesn't feel like you can't sleep, you can't go to work, you can't continue life. Let me read again from the stack of comments. I mean, there's so many comments from parents and from moms who've gone through a lot. This one is from Brooke, who writes the following. She says, I always intended to breastfeed my daughter, and I've been doing so as much as I've been able to since she was born. But I had severe complications after I gave birth, and was therefore unable to breastfeed when I was in the hospital. Since we came home, we've been supplementing with formula, but we've been trying to switch to breast milk exclusively with mixed luck. The problem: my daughter loves to nurse a little too much, and in the past couple of days, she's begun to nurse for over an hour and still not be sated. When I turned to respectable sources like some credited websites and even What to Expect, the advice I was given was essentially, nurse for as long as your baby wants, and whatever you do, don't give her formula or your milk supply will go down, and we wouldn't want that, would we? Well, needless to say, this was discouraging to a woman with sore nipples and a bad back who was running on 2 hours of sleep and was barely finding time to brush her teeth. And when I Googled, when is mom supposed to sleep when baby wants to nurse all the time? I couldn't find a single mention of how a nursing mom is supposed to take care of herself when her baby is attached to her most of the hours of the day, or a discussion of the fact that when mom is exhausted and crying at 4 a.m., that's probably worse for the baby than an ounce or two of formula from time to time. Luckily, today we saw our pediatrician, who is sane, this is Brooke's words, and recognized this is not sustainable and told us we should keep supplementing. So that comes from Brooke, but that common, especially new mom, fear or frustration with, I don't know how much milk my child's taking. She or he always wants to feed. Do I ever find time to sleep? I mean, a lot of nodding around this room. Yeah. This is where that support's got to come in to say, how do we support that? What do we do about that? Jacqueline, you want to handle Brooke's comment there?
So, Brooke, I would say that for me, I always plan to breastfeed also before I had my daughter, and she came 14 weeks early. So that meant she was in the NICU, in an incubator. I wasn't able to feed her. She wasn't taking food by mouth initially. So for me, that meant pumping around the clock to be able to feed her when she was finally able to latch. It was hard. Like, I think it's really important to acknowledge that breastfeeding does take work. You know, sometimes you lose out on sleep. And sometimes you are just, you know, exhausted. I think it's always important to acknowledge that. And sometimes supplementation is recommended by doctors. Sometimes it is necessary. And I think, you know, they're being able to have that choice. Do I want to keep breastfeeding? Am I okay with supplementing? And doing what you think is right for yourself. I think that's really important.
Okay.
And we got to remember that there are people around this mother or parent who's lactating, and they're not alone. And so I think, you know, Megan should talk a little bit about, because she works extensively with many community organizations, about how do we build structures around people so that they don't feel so alone and they have to Google in the middle of the night. Like, who else can you call for this stuff?
To me, this mom sounds like somebody who doesn't have a really good source of information that she can depend on, that she can ask these kind of questions to. And, you know, especially if you're the first person in your friend group or family to have a baby, it can be really overwhelming to know, who should I trust? Where should I look for all of this information regarding sleep, breastfeeding, all of the stuff that goes into parenting? And so, you know, there are a lot of community organizations that are available. So first, you know, the WIC program has a breastfeeding peer counselor program. La Leche League has 4 different groups throughout Monroe County and one in Ontario County that meet in person. They have Facebook groups. They are available by phone and email. And then also, you know, the baby cafes that are grant funded that are in 3 different locations now, which do have scales where you can check, you know, before and after weights to kind of ease your mind. You know, it's possible that this baby might be going through a growth spurt. It's hard to know exactly what's going on. And knowing that, yes, sometimes you might go through one day or 2 days where baby's nursing nonstop, and knowing that that's normal. Or, you know, maybe is it not normal? Has this been going on for a while? And so getting support from a lactation consultant or from another organization can be really helpful and put your mind at ease, because our breasts don't have ounce markers on them. You know, it's not, you know, unless you are pumping and bottle feeding, you're really not going to know just by, you know, by looking at the baby necessarily if they've gotten enough, although there are signs that you can look at on the baby to know if they've gotten enough.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You know, if you look at it, even if you look across Europe, there's huge disparities. Scandinavian countries have really high levels of breastfeeding, not only at birth, but 6 months in, a year in. France and Ireland, very low rates compared to the rest of the world, lower than the United States. I just happened a couple of weeks ago to spend time with one of my old friends from Paris, who was in the United States visiting with her three young kids. And another one of our family members has a new baby. And my friend from France was just remarking that they said they think it's strange, the obsession with breastfeeding here. And she said it's just the culture in France is that formula feeding is pretty common because parents like to sleep, and we think sleep schedules are important for kids. And she said, I think American kids have sleep disorders, and it partially comes from an obsession of breastfeeding. And I said, well, look, there are advantages to formula feeding. Like Megan just said, you can know exactly how much you fed.
Sure.
You can space out the feedings. Mom and dad can both feed, though, of course, if you pump, dad can feed too. But, you know, does it outweigh the other advantages? And, you know, my friend from France said for French parents, the answer is yes. And she was speaking generally. But it sounds like here, the argument is if you know the support, if you can get the support, that you can deal with some of the challenges and the disadvantages of breastfeeding.
Yeah? Right. And I think the other thing we must mention about France, that the formula companies still have extreme sway over French hospitals about giving things out. I mean, none of this is natural French culture. If you look historically pre-World War II, people were breastfeeding in France and they figured out a way to sleep. And I don't mean to say that lightly. Sleep is a huge part, both of failed breastfeeding and difficulty with breastfeeding and with parenting in general. But also, we've done a lot of studies and we find that even babies who take formula at night have similar amounts of sleep and sometimes have less of the deep sleep than babies who are breastfed. And so to say more simply that you can get more sleep by breastfeeding, I think, is a tricky thing to say.
That's interesting. Is that scientific?
Yes.
Babies who are breastfed
deeper? Well, we've actually done sleep studies where we've put sensors on babies' brains and watched them sleep and compared the way the babies are fed. And you look at the delta wave sleep, which is the more restful sleep, and you look at the REM sleep, and you look at the time of awakening and the time of sleep, and we've done this both in and out of the hospital, and some studies show that there's even a 20-minute benefit per night in terms of amount of sleep for mom and baby and more delta wave sleep. I think the difference is that it's the lactating parent who has to be the one doing it, right? And so that is tricky, and if you are using bottles, then there are more people who could ostensibly come to your house and breastfeed and feed your baby. But I don't think we see that in actuality. I don't see many grandparents coming over for long periods of time to feed babies at night.
And if I could just cut in.
This is Dr. Bellis DeBrown, Monroe County Deputy Commissioner of Public Health. Go ahead.
And so when we make these comparisons across different cultures, we also have to take into consideration the rest of the context around the family unit, the mother diet, mother-child diet, and any other support person, because other countries have a lot longer paid maternity leave. A lot of other countries give fathers any number of months of paternity leave so that they can be that support person to feed this child when mom needs to sleep and shower and just be herself somewhat in the way she was before she had the child. Other countries have much more supportive work policies in terms of, we have to admit that in this country, a lot of women have to go back to work and don't have a lot of time to just be home. And so there are a lot of supports that can be put in place in a workspace to make it possible for her to express milk and then take it home and have, or take it to a child care center, that needs to have policies in place that will support her in saying, yes, we will keep your milk in a fridge. Yes, we will feed it to your child, and maybe dispel myths about, oh, this is a biohazard that, you know, someone other than the mom can't possibly touch. So there are a lot of other context around just the family unit that we need to think about improving in order to be able to support support people in their choices and not have moms feel like they're going absolutely insane.
Let me ask Barbara and Betsy on the phone. Just hang in there for one more minute. We're going to get to your phone calls. But on the subject of sort of this, is there a cultural divide, understanding the context, for example, in France, and understanding the impact of an industry that's, you know, has a close relationship with the medical system. Here is an email that we got on sort of a different look at communities. And this is from Mona in Rochester. She said, I had my son at 18 and I did not breastfeed, primarily because it wasn't really presented as the best option, meaning they said, do you want to? I said no, and they said, okay. I didn't understand the benefits. I breastfed my daughter, and I wish I could have gone back in time as a do-over for my son. We co-slept so that I could feed her in the night, and that helped us all get more sleep. I pumped a bottle for my husband to feed her, allowing them bonding time. Breastfeeding rates are low among American women of color because it's not really presented in a way that helps us make an informed choice. I think lactation classes are just as important as birthing classes in communities of color. That is from Mona. Jacqueline, you want to respond to that?
So yeah, definitely. There are definitely a lot of inequities that exist when it comes to opportunities, awareness, and resources for Black women who want to breastfeed. So low availability and access to breastfeeding support, a lot of lack of family and community support. A lot of times a workplace that is not accommodating to a need to pump, and a lot of women of color may have to go to work sooner, go back to work sooner. So, I mean, there's a lot of these inequalities that stem actually back to slavery, when enslaved women were forced to wet nurse the babies of their slave masters, oftentimes at the expense of themselves. So it just dates back into history, and then great-grandparents and grandparents not breastfeeding. And so there just really needs to be more support for Black women in the community. And that's what a lot of programs in the Rochester community hope to do, and something that I'm very passionate about.
Are you seeing change happen?
Yes, I definitely am in this community, just by women who aren't sure about breastfeeding, have never seen breastfeeding, have somebody else say, look, I did it, and, you know, here are the benefits, figuring out what they know and maybe what they want to know. There is definitely still a lot of inequity, and that is, you know, shown, I think, Dr. Rosen-Carroll has some more data also, but, you know, there's a higher infant mortality rate for Black babies, and something like breastfeeding could really help to, you know, change that as well.
And I think, you know, the other thing is the role of discrimination, which is still there. And although, you know, it may not be as overt as people recognizing that they're being discriminatory, but I do hear still from people and trainees and providers who will say, oh, well, Black women don't breastfeed. And I say, okay, well, the rate might be 76% to 80%, but that's still a lot of people breastfeeding on this floor right now. And there's a really lovely documentary on YouTube that you can find called Chocolate Milk, looking at all of the different ways that all of these sociocultural things interact with sort of the daily discriminatory behaviors of the healthcare system that we're trying to overcome. And indeed, Jacqueline's been working a lot on Black Breastfeeding Week, which is another way of drawing attention to the particular issues that women who identify as Black or African American face when they're trying to breastfeed in this particular historical and socioeconomic context.
So I also just want to add that there is a lack of lactation consultants, counselors of women of color. There is a huge need for that. With my program, Baby Love, we actually just received a grant to train 10 of our community health workers who are all women of color to become lactation counselors. So we hope that that will help change some of this as well.
And Dr. Valles-Debron, I couldn't help but notice there was at least a little bit of a facial reaction when you heard co-sleeping. Is there? Do you want to just add? I mean, that's a whole separate conversation.
That's a whole different conversation, yes. And so it just is always concerning for possible increased rates of SIDS. Children obviously should be put to bed in an area where they don't have bumpers around their crib, where they're not going to have a blanket or a stuffed animal kind of go fall over their face when they're too young to be able to turn their heads to breathe. I absolutely I can absolutely understand the fatigue and the exhaustion that leads to folks ending up doing that, but having maybe a bassinet nearby, or, you know, even in Europe, they're giving away baby boxes and just putting that near a bed where the child will not be at risk for those other things while mom or dad catch the necessary sleep that they can, it would be important to try to avoid mortality from other things like SIDS.
Okay. Thank you, Maya. Yeah, go ahead, Megan.
Evan, I just wanted to mention really briefly when we were talking about inequities that one of the works of the coalition, we received the New York State Creating Breastfeeding Friendly Communities grant, and that does focus a lot on not only increasing access through baby cafes, but also through creating breastfeeding friendly work sites, breastfeeding friendly healthcare practices, and breastfeeding friendly childcare. So currently, there's a New York State designation. I think we have 6 work sites that are that have completed this process, and 14 that are in process. For healthcare practices, we have 4 that have completed it, and 11 that are in process. And we have 47 child care homes and 5 child care centers that have completed this, and 3 more that are in process. So, you know, if we could talk about this in a year from now or 2 years from now, sure. Hopefully we would have even more support, and we hope that those numbers will continue to grow.
Okay.
Evan?
Yes, go ahead, Joy.
I think it's interesting listening to it, because when I first spoke with someone about being on the panel, I was assured and that it wouldn't be, you know, pro breastfeeding, and I understand that that's the direction it's gone, but I think it's conversations like this that make women like me feel very isolated, because what I'm hearing is all the benefits from this perspective of promoting breastfeeding and why people choose not to breastfeed, but what if they could, as the best option, but all the reasons why, well, if you can't, we should embrace formula feeding women. And I think that's what's so hard about the choice that I made, is that with all the professionals in my world, this was a very valid choice. And while I understand the research that's being presented, I also truly don't believe that all of the OBGYNs at my firm, at my practice, and the pediatricians are selling me down a river in terms of health information. I think that's why this is such a hot debate worldwide, is that there are lots of different interpretations of long-term holistic health for babies and moms that is complex, and that choices are personal. And I wish as a society we were more balanced in the promotion of the personal family medical choice as we were of the science of breastfeeding, just like we would any health choice that anybody makes where there's a multitude of opinions. And I particularly wish that that came from some of the community agencies that are working with women that maybe aren't feeling as empowered as I was to make a choice that was truly right for me.
Okay, and I suspect our guests in studio will want to respond to that. And Joy, I'm hearing everything, and I am not at all.
No, not you. Yeah.
Yeah, judging him.
No, not you.
Yeah. No, I'm with you, and I know how delicate these conversations are, and they're very hard conversations to have. I just want to make sure I understand a little bit more when you talk about a balanced conversation. Are you suggesting that for someone in your sort of personal situation, you're thinking about work and your family and your needs as a family and all of the different factors, that the balanced choice for you was formula feeding despite the research? Or are you saying you think the research is as you see it, not accurate?
I'm saying both, that I think that I truly, and as God is my witness, all of the OBGYNs in my practice, and I spoke with my pediatrician, because there's so much guilt about making formula feeding a choice, that I've asked every practitioner I've met. I spoke with the nurses at Highland repeatedly and the social worker, and they'll all say, this is what you're going to hear, but the research is actually really mixed, and it's hard to tell long term, and it's a much more complex thing. And I don't feel I was being misled in that way, but if I only listened to the people on the panel and those organizations and what the New York State Department of Health says is the right answer, I would feel that I'm making an unhealthy choice for my child, and I don't actually believe that I am. And certainly we have a zillion kids that are formula fed. I mean, long term, we, you know.
Yeah. No, I hear
it's
that.
It's so confusing. Like, how do you as a parent walk away when what the government says is so different than every provider in your life?
And Joy, I would expect the healthcare experts would say your children have tremendous support. They're going to have probably great nutrition their whole lives when, you know, when they're eating, you know, sort of regular
whatever
food. They're going to have, you know, great sleep schedules. They're going to have. So, I think it's complex, but I think I'm not an expert. And I'm trying to at least understand what the people who have in our community the most expertise in understanding it. I don't want anyone to feel judged, but I'm trying to understand. So let me start with Dr. Casey Rosen-Carroll. Casey, who can kind of respond to some of what you're hearing from Joy, who's saying, look, my pediatrician's presented a more murky picture on
right.
what the research says.
Yeah, and you know what? It's hard to comment on one person's experience, right? And so I want to start my comment by just saying that, you know, there's no scientific organization in the world that doesn't agree with the evidence that breast milk has is preferable for the immediate and long-term health outcomes of infants. And, you know, at risk of making the whole hour about the research, what I think we're trying to say in this room is much more that we want to make sure it's a choice. Because for so long, one of the things I admire about Joy and I admire about you coming here and telling us the story is that you sought out information, you evaluated the information, and you made the choice that was right for your family. And I do not think that we are universally allowing women to have that type of access to care, that type of access to counseling, talking to the social workers, talking to the lactation counselors, going to OBs. There are people still without prenatal care. There's still people who don't go to pediatric visits. And so my goal in this room is really to point out to the Rochester community that I just want to make sure that people know the resources, they know what can help, and then they make a choice. And that's called informed consent, right? That's called informed decision making. And God bless if we could have a whole country that was making informed choices, I would be a happy physician.
And I might add, if I can jump in, this is Dr. Velez de Brown again, that, you know, part of that Creating Breastfeeding Friendly Communities grant is targeting healthcare providers, because there is an entire world of evidence that is being generated, that is coming to light, that many of us never saw in medical school. And so it does take some time for providers to come up to speed with the latest information and not only read the study for myself, but then decide, how do I present this information in a way that doesn't put off my patient like Joy, who is considering making this decision, and really, as Dr. Rosen-Carroll mentioned, gives them the entire picture so that they can make the informed decision. Because
sure.
I can tell you, breastfeeding, I heard like one lecture about it maybe in med school.
Yeah. And you know, the last thing I'd say is it's a false dichotomy, like that the only other option is formula. There are whole countries, like I said, that have national breast milk banks, and we have enough breastfeeding women in this country that we could feed all of the children if there were a national effort with breast milk, if that was part of the informed choice, right? But we're not even offering that choice. We're so far behind at the policy level.
Okay, and Joy's got to go in a second, and I think part of the goal is supporting all mothers and all people from all backgrounds and what is happening with their children, all of them. I mean, in a moment, we're going to get some phone calls. I definitely want the panel's thoughts on if we are improving on how, when women breastfeed in public, are we growing up about that? Have we gotten better at, you know, I mean, like, we probably have a long way to go in the workplace. I mean, there's a lot here. But I think, you know, I hear what Joy's saying. I know a woman in this community who chose not to breastfeed, and told me, she said, I accept that breastfeeding is better. But better is sort of a murky term, in that it is better than formula. But is it so much better that it outweighs getting on a sleep schedule for the parent, but also for the child? Is it so much better that it outweighs all these other things? And so the question I think that people may still have is, the research says it's better, but is it exceedingly better? Is it better in a way that puts children in danger without it? You know, and that's the pushback I've heard from women who are choosing
yes.
to formula feed.
Absolutely.
And that summarizes what I've heard. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's beautiful. And I would say that as a breastfeeding medicine provider, sometimes I surprise people because I bring up to them, like, are you sure this is the right thing for you, right? And I'll recommend sometimes formula, right? Are you sure that this is really working for you? And sometimes people need permission to make a different informed choice. And parenting is all about making hard decisions that have risks and benefits that are individual for you. And so I think you phrased that beautifully, Evan.
Joy, thanks for the time. I know you got a split. Thanks for I know it's tough. Thank you very much, Joy.
Thanks for having me. Good luck, everyone.
You got it. And so So let's do this. Let's take a couple of phone calls. And then I really want to get, I'm very curious to know if our panelists think that for women who want to breastfeed at work when they go back to work, for women breastfeeding in public, are we growing up as a society about this? I'm very curious to hear what they have to say. But our phone callers have been waiting for a while. Barbara in Rochester, go ahead.
I had a very, very different experience in trying to learn about breastfeeding with my first child when I, early in my pregnancy, asked my obstetrician. The response was, are you going to breastfeed for 9 months? Well, if you're not going to do that, then don't bother to get started. And what I discovered later was that this was a man who was the father of 8 children, and his wife ended up with plugged ducts and was never able to breastfeed. So he felt like a failure, and I shouldn't start. So I think it can be very, very naive to depend on our provider solely. And I did breastfeed my second daughter. I went for 5 months before she was born to the La Leche League. I thought we're way out in left field until I started breastfeeding. But I had the information, and I actively made the choice to try it for 6 weeks. And if it was for me and my daughter, fine. And if it wasn't, fine. But it would be an informed choice for me. And as it turned out, my younger daughter needed to have surgery twice. And I was able to encode her with some little phrases and songs. And I was allowed in the recovery room with her. And the nurses forgot about us because she was so quiet that I would nurse her as she was coming out of the anesthesia and then sing her these little phrases, Mommy's here and twinkle, twinkle, little star, those kinds of things. And she was so calm that the nurses forgot about us for over an hour and a half in the recovery room and came running in to see if she was okay. So for me, there were incredible benefits to breastfeeding. I've always wanted to do the do-over to go back and breastfeed my older daughter. But, you know, I still, especially when I hear discussions of breastfeeding or not breastfeeding, I still get angry with that doctor who fortunately has retired.
Well, Barbara, thank you. And I think this highlights a question. Are our guests in studio, are you comfortable with providers giving good information? A lot of pauses there.
I think all providers are doing the absolute best that they can, and there is a lot of information that we could all continue to learn. That's why nurses and physicians are required to get continuing medical education, and if more of it was around the facts about breastfeeding, I would be happy about that.
Yeah, so I think it's really important to point out that there's actually research on the physician's personal experience leading the way in what they recommend in the office setting.
Exactly as Barbara is
saying. And unfortunately, that's because it's not being taught the way it needs to be. And at the University of Rochester, we're doing our utmost to make sure it's in every year of medical school and every residency gets exposure. But the truth is, until it gets on the boards in a concrete way, we will still not be having physicians graduating with appropriate levels of knowledge, which means that their personal experience is going to fill in the gaps.
Okay. Betsy in Brighton next on the phone. Keep it tight, Betsy. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to get back to the original reason for the discussion, which was the worldwide promotion of breastfeeding. And we have to remember that not everybody lives in a first world country like we do. So their access to clean water for making formula is a problem. The cost of purchasing formula is a problem. Cleaning bottles, the amount of waste that purchasing formula creates as opposed to breastfeeding, so there's environmental concerns. I nursed three of my three children, but my mother did not nurse any of her children. She had five, and she said at the time it was highly looked down upon. It was considered a low-class thing to do, and it was primarily promotion from the formula companies wanting to sell their products. So it's essentially the same as GMO seeds, where they're wanting to increase their market share across the world, and that's how they view it. But I understand the woman who was talking about going back to work. I had the luxury of being able to stay home with my kids, and I would not have done anything different. Yes, it was very difficult sometimes. I had one that was like a vacuum cleaner, and it did hurt initially. But I also want to make a comment about sleeping with the baby, because that one, as I was eating lunch one day, looked down and saw her face turning blue as her nose was obstructed by my breast. So, everybody's situation is different, and I think we all need to give people grace, but we also have, we sexualize the breasts in our country, and we have to realize that that's the way, you know, we were made, and that's the purpose of breasts. I think that a good suggestion would maybe be to have some kind of Facebook page or some social media page where prior nursing mothers could give advice.
Well, and Betsy, let me jump in because we're on down our last 90 seconds. Support, Megan.
So we actually have some life-size standees that are used in public to kind of normalize breastfeeding. We also have a Breastfeeding Welcome Here campaign where local businesses can put the international breastfeeding symbol on the front of their store or business to show their support for moms breastfeeding. Even though it's the law, it's not always recognized.
It's the law, but it's not necessarily always the culture.
Yeah.
And where can they get that sign or
any businesses that are interested in becoming breastfeeding friendly can contact the coalition, and there are multiple different Facebook groups that are out there, including La Leche League, including I think there's Rock City Nurse.
So La Leche League, she's talking about the Rochester Regional Breastfeeding Coalition. Get in touch if you want. Yep. Put it on your store if you want. Let people know they're welcome. Are we getting better in terms of reacting to women in the workplace in public settings?
Maybe
very slowly if we are.
Very slowly.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. Yeah, it's... I mean, I think most people don't know that, you know, women are supposed to be allowed to take time to breastfeed and express milk at work. That is a requirement. They are supposed to have a space that is private, that is not a restroom where they can express milk. Women generally need to express milk maybe every 2 to 3 hours and are supposed to be allowed to go somewhere and either take their scheduled breaks or be able to take make up any extra time before or after a shift to just be able to express the milk that they're going to take back to
and
their
I
child.
Routinely hear from people who are professional and otherwise who don't get that time.
So if we've got a long way to go for supporting families, parents, women, paid leave, all kinds of things factor in here.
Yes.
But just the stigmatizing of women breastfeeding in public or at work, I think our panel says stop it.
Please.
Please stop it. Thank you for being here. And again, I want to say to everyone who's listened and everyone who's gone through these questions and rested, there's so many. I hope you feel supported. I hope you feel like you've got good information. And I want to thank our guests for being here and providing that. Megan Muller, thank you. Jacqueline Lindsay, Dr. Maria Elena Velez de Brown, and Dr. Casey Rosen Carroll, thank you all for being here.
Thank you so much.
More Connections is coming up next.